We are celebrating St. Patrick's Day. It's a day late, but it was the first Sunday, the closest Sunday we had to it. And so some of us are wearing green and others aren't. But that's all right. It's not really St. Patrick's Day, and we can't pinch you. I asked our resident historian, scholar, Jeb Porter, to come and share with us about St. Patrick. And I was telling Stephen on the way here, the two things that everybody knows about St. Patrick is that he was a Catholic saint and he was Irish. Well, both of those are wrong. So who in the world is this St. Patrick? Jeb, come and share with us about St. Patrick.
Pastor's right. I history has always been one of my fields that I enjoy studying. I have three major fields that I enjoy: linguistics, history, and theology. Just had a friend over the other night, and I was so excited. I finally got my bookshelves up and all my books up since we moved in. You know, I finally got them up, and I asked him. I said, "Would you like to come meet my books?" So I took him downstairs. I have a few, and I have several hundred in hard copy, and then a couple thousand on disc. And so I was showing him and explaining books. And one of the great lover of studying the medieval and ancient world. Lots of history books on Rome and on medieval Europe. But one of the areas that I kind of focused in on is Roman and Anglo-Saxon England. And so this was an area that I had studied. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is he's right. Patrick wasn't Irish. In fact, he was what is called a Romano-Briton. He was born and raised in Britain, in the western portion, we assume. He was from a place called Bonavem Taberniae, but that place doesn't exist anymore, so we're not exactly sure where that was, but we assume, you know, all the historians assume they lived on the western side of the Isle of Great Britain, because he was taken captive by Irish pirates. One of the things, I'm part Irish, among parts of many other things besides. In fact, if you go direct line descent, I did my family tree, direct line descent through my father. My family emigrated from Ireland, from County Down, Northern Ireland, to Virginia back in the early 1700s. And so I'm of Irish descent, but you always have to keep things in perspective. And, you know, yes, the Irish have cause against the way they've been treated by the British. But one of the things that they don't like to talk about was that they were continually, from before Roman times and after Roman times, continually raiding Great Britain. Irish pirates were a continual problem. Patrick was the son of a man named Calpurnius, who was the son of Potitus. Patrick's real name was Patricius. He was a Roman. He was a Roman Briton. His dad owned a villa. He was a man of civilized Roman Briton. It says that his father was a deacon and his grandfather was an elder or pastor. He lived in the 400s. This would have been around the time of the fall of the Western Roman Empire. Things were starting to become disunified and falling apart. One of the things that led to an increase in the Irish raiding Great Britain was that at this time there was a lot of contention for control of the Western Roman Empire to see who would be the emperor, and the Romans pulled the military out of Great Britain. They pulled the Roman legions out of Great Britain. So the citizens in Great Britain were left their own devices to protect themselves. In fact, at one point when they were facing a lot of raiding from the Irish and from the Saxons, who were coming from modern-day the Netherlands, coming across the sea and attacking Great Britain, they sent a letter to Emperor Honorius, who wrote them back saying simply, "See to thy own defense." They were Roman citizens, but he said, "You're on your own." And it was shortly after that that the whole Roman Empire just collapsed. You know, the Western Roman Empire collapsed. And so he lived during that time when Rome was on the brink of failing. When he was 16 years old, he says, thousands of others were captured by Irish raiders. They came, and the Irish at this time were pagans. They worshipped their old gods. And he was taken into Ireland. I said that he was the son of a deacon and the grandson of a pastor, but he says of himself, he says that even though he was 16, he says he did not know the Lord. Interesting thing about this, because the Catholics, they tried to present a false view that the way that Christianity has always been is the way they present it, and that they themselves have always been the same, with a succession of popes, and the popes always being meant to be the head of the church, and the celibacy of the priesthood, the sacraments, all those things, that they have always been the same, even their whole sprinkling of babies. But if you spend any time studying history, you find out things haven't always been the same. The whole celibacy of the priesthood, that didn't happen until after 1000 AD. The fact of the Pope being the head over all the West, you know, claiming to be head over all the church, that also didn't happen until, you know, wasn't truly asserted until after 1000 AD. It was during that period that you really start to see formulating and, becoming what is now the Roman Catholic Church. Things were different once upon a time. And in the time of Patrick, it wasn't like that. And we can see, you know, nowadays, the Roman Catholics teach that you are saved by being a member of the Roman Catholic Church, by being baptized into the Roman Catholic Church and keeping their sacraments. That grace is imparted, the grace of God is imparted through the sacraments. And there's multiple sacraments. Baptism, the Mass, Last Rites, and there's a bunch of others. These are all sacraments, and they impart grace. If that was so, then we find a discontinuity here, because Patrick says that when he was 16, even though his father was a deacon and his grandfather was a pastor, he says at 16, "I did not know the Lord." So rather than it being, so from his view, rather than it being a deal about being a member of the church and receiving the sacraments, it was a personal relationship. So he was taken captive by these Irish raiders, and he says that during his captivity, he spent most of his time out in the fields and in the forest. He was probably a herdsman of some kind. I was talking to Pastor Weigel about it. I think because of his mention of the forests, that he was probably a swineherd, because in the ancient times, they did not herd any other animals except for pigs in the forest. You took pigs into the forest to forage for mushrooms and nuts. And, truffles are mushrooms. Okay. But they would, you know, all over Europe, that's what they would do, is they'd take the pigs, especially in the autumn. You take your pigs, up until that time, you're feeding them on the grasses and grains and such. But come autumn, you take them to the forests to fatten them up on the nuts, because the nuts have a lot of fat in them. And you can really put weight on the pigs by taking them into the oak forests and such, and letting them eat the nuts and eat the mushrooms, and they really put on weight. And so I think because of that statement that he spent a lot of time in the fields and in the forests as a slave, he said all day and sometimes all through the night, meaning probably he was a herdsman who would sleep, spend all day with the out in the fields and sleep with the herds. And he says that during this time that he believes that God allowed this because of the sin of the people, his sin and the other sin of the people, that they had in their time of prosperity. Rome brought great prosperity wherever it went. There's a lot of naysaying about everything Western nowadays, but Rome brought wealth and prosperity everywhere it went. And Britain had grown fat and wealthy under the Romans. And with that comes decadence and greed and love of pleasure. And he says that because of these things, because he says he felt that because of their sins as a people, that God allowed the Irish to come and take them into slavery. And it was while he was in slavery that he says that he came to a saving knowledge of the Lord. He says that while he was in the fields watching the herds all day, that he said the more he suffered, the more he reached out to God. And he would pray as much as, he said, it got up to as much as 100 times a day, pray to God. And he said, and God responded with his grace. Well, eventually he gained his freedom and returned to his people. But while he was there, he came under conviction to go back to Ireland. To go back to Ireland and to share the gospel with the pagan peoples who had captured him. He mentions a man named Victoricus. Victoricus was a man who was martyred for Christianity, and he was a major evangelist in the late Roman Empire in what is now modern day France. And he was martyred in what is now called Amiens, France, Amiens. He was martyred, and his name was Victoricus. And he makes reference to hearing from Victoricus, pleading with him to go to Ireland and share the gospel with the people in Ireland. And so he went back. Can you imagine? These people had kidnapped him and made him a slave. And he went back, so filled with the grace of God and the love of the Lord Jesus Christ, that he went back to the same people who had made him a slave, and he went back to them to share the gospel with them. So successful was his ministry that it's recorded that he baptized thousands. Now remember, much smaller population base. So that would have been a very wide area. He established churches all over Ireland. He established, the Catholics like to say that he established monasteries, but these weren't what we think of as monasteries. Monasteries now evoke the picture of men in robes who all live together under one roof and chant, and they never do anything else but sit in their, you know, their monastery and stay there their whole lives. That's not what these monasteries established by Patrick did. Men would come to these and they would train and they would be taught in the word of God. Then they would go back to their homes. These were more like what we call seminaries and Bible colleges than monasteries. But the Catholic Church, as it went on, it tended to try to take credit for everything and to re-describe things in their terms and try to make it. They even tried to do that with some of the pagan gods of different countries, tried to make them saints. One of the old saints of Ireland was actually a pagan god. And they would claim holy sites that were holy sites to the pagans and make them Christian holy sites. Catholic Church was always doing things like that. But that work didn't end with Patrick's life. After him, because of the work that he did in Ireland, they started sending missionaries. They sent missionaries into what's now modern-day Scotland. They sent missionaries into the modern Netherlands. They sent missionaries into Germany. And they said up until around 900 AD that there were... you can read about this in secular history books. I have a big fat book called History of Civilization. And it says, it talks about the fact that there were competing forms of Christianity up until about 900 AD. And they said Irish-British Christianity and Roman Christianity in Western Europe until about 900 AD. What's significant about 900 AD? Between 800 and 900 AD is the Viking invasions. The Vikings principally hit Great Britain and Ireland, greatly weakening both areas. Then what happened was that the Pope, the Roman Pope, remember I said around 1000 AD is when the Pope started exerting control. It was around 1000 AD when Europe finally got past all the Viking invasions. And the Pope sent a messenger to the King of England, King Henry, and he told him to go and bring Wales and Ireland under control, and to bring them under control of, you know, in right fellowship with the Bishop of Rome. The Catholic Church has not grown through evangelism. The Catholic Church has always done it by conquest. What you do is you go, the popes would go, and they would convince rulers of the benefit of aligning themselves with the Bishop of Rome. And then they would use those rulers to force conformity on the people. In 600 AD, the Pope sent a man by the name of Augustine, not the famous Augustine of Hippo, but another Augustine, and sent him to England, and he convinced one of the kings to become a Roman Catholic and to force the Christians in his kingdom to conform to the customs of Rome. Later, you know, so later also in France, under King Louis the Pious, the Pope did it again. Southern France around the city of Toulouse used to be politically separate from the rest of France. And they were actually very open to allowing other forms of Christianity than Roman Christianity to exist. And the Pope used the King of France to conquer southern France and force it into conformity. And so from the time of Patrick in the 400s all the way up until around 1000 AD, these guys were going out and spreading Christianity throughout the British Isles and Northwest Europe. And that same group, you know, you think, well, man, they died out. Too bad they died out. But they didn't really. It survived. Wycliffe, who wrote the first Bible in English, learned of their descendants, you know, learned from their followers. And it was because of Wycliffe that men like John Huss in Bohemia and even Martin Luther was influenced by these men. That seed of the truth carried on. The Roman Catholic Church wants to present this false picture of history that things have always been the same, that they've always been the ones in control. But the truth is, God has always had his witness. The reason why Baptists are not Protestants is we didn't try to change the Catholic Church. We are theologically descended from people who were never a part of the Catholic Church, who said the Catholic Church is not Christian and we will not be a part of it. we are theologically descended from men like Patrick, who stood for the gospel and who died in Northern Ireland among the people who had once held him as a slave. So that's why we honor St. Patrick, not a Catholic saint, but a minister of the gospel of the grace of Jesus Christ.